Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello, and welcome to the show. Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hey, good, Taylor. Glad to be here. How you doing?
Doing just fine. Hey, tell me, did you have anything good to drink this week?
Actually, I had two drinks based on previous episodes that I had never had before and wanted to experience it, and I was lucky to capture them in the wild.
Oh.
Actually.
Captured in the wild? Tell me about it.
Well, one, actually, I didn't have to capture. Well, I was telling Mom about our episode last week of Jägermeister, and I said, I want to get a bottle and try that now that I have this new perspective. And she said, well, we have one in the liquor cabinet. I said, no, we don't. She said, yes, we do. And she got down there and dug into it and pulled it out. Well, it was Jäger, but it was the cold brew Jäger.
Ah.
But that didn't deter me, though. I said, I've got to try it. So I got my Watershed little drinking glass and poured myself a small shot of it and sipped on that. It was nice and warming and very good. And I guess the only difference in just regular Jäger is the coffee and cacao flavorings that they have on there.
It's infused with coffee, right? Like it's sort of like a coffee liqueur.
I think they just add some flavorings to it. I don't think it's fully infused, although I could be wrong. I didn't really read it. I just was too excited to get a chance to try it.
Well, that's cool.
But I sipped on it.
That.
I should do what?
Oh, so you should, I know you love your espresso martinis. Did you do any subs there?
No, but I did think about that. I thought, that might work instead of Kahlua.
Yeah.
And so I am going to try that maybe this upcoming weekend. I'm going to try making my espresso martini with this instead of Kahlua. Use the same measurement, see how that works. Maybe play around with it a little bit.
That sounds delicious.
It was. I will tell you this. It was nice to sip on. I did just for the heck of it to see what it was like, throw back a whole shot. That's a little rough.
Well, this is another way to drink it. Shoot it.
Yeah.
Yes, but you're not going to have a different flavor experience when you shoot it.
I admire the old German way to drink it, not the frat boy way.
I mean, hey, as long as you enjoyed it. Well, that's cool. What was you said you had two that you found in the wild.
Now, this one was truly in the wild. Like I talked about before, Mom and I went to that brewery/hotel and stayed there. It was up in Columbus, Ohio. And on the way back, of course, you don't drive interstate back to here. It's all backcountry highway, driving through flat rolling farmland. And so there's just old hole in the wall gas station. I had to stop and get gas. And I went in to go to the restroom and come back out. And a box in the beer cooler caught my eye. And I thought, surely that can't be. And I went back and looked again. And there was the blue box of the Finnish long drink.
Huh.
Sitting in the middle of Ohio, in the middle of a cornfield.
That's wild that you found that. I have a hard time finding that here in the city.
Well, and they were stocked there. It wasn't like that was the only one. They had a good supply of it. And so I grabbed one of those out and said, now I get to try these. So I bought that and brought it home and drank one this weekend. And man, they're good. They're very carbonated. I was surprised at how carbonated they are.
Yeah, they're really refreshing too, and they don't taste boozy either.
No,
they just taste like a nice soda.
If you gave somebody this and said, "We don't have Fresca, but I've got this," it's about the same thing. You would probably drink it, and it would be, it tastes like a soda, and you don't really taste the alcohol. It's a nice, light, refreshing drink.
Yeah, well, that's awesome. I'm glad you got to try those. Yeah, I'm a big fan of those.
Me too. Riley's coming home this weekend, and I plan on sharing one with her. I think it'd be right up her alley.
Oh, she'll like those. Absolutely.
Yeah. What about you? You have anything in particular or of interest?
I didn't have anything particularly of note this week. Actually, it's funny. I think the things that I had this week that I thought were cool were actually non-alcoholic. I had, the brand. I think it's Figlia. I hope I'm not saying that wrong. There's a non-alcoholic, canned it's clearly meant to taste sort of like a sparkling Amari kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like it has like Amaro notes and then it's carbonated. And I got it as a can because I find that it's an important thing when it comes to managing my drinking. Because when you do a drinking podcast and you work in bars and you have lots of alcohol at your house, it's good to keep count of how often and how much you're drinking. And there's an important separation between when I think I want to drink and what I actually want is just a nice little bevy.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be alcoholic. I just want something tasty.
Right.
And that is the spot that I find a lot of like fancy sodas or non-alcoholic cocktails fill that void. Mm-hmm. And I tried this one in that mindset. And I think the other brand I tried was Flyers, but they were both so good. I did have the thought, oh, these would be great with a shot of gin in them, but I didn't do it. I drank them as is. So they're really, really coming with the can mocktails, you know, sort of bitter sodas, all sorts of fun stuff.
Well, it's funny you say that in the group that we're going to talk about in this episode. One of them was talking about the importance of non-alcoholic beverages in bars. Mm-hmm. That's a growing thing, that non-alcoholic cocktails that you make. And they said that, you know, that's very prevalent now. That's new to me. I've never really heard of that before.
I think it's a good standard that whatever kind of menu you build, you should know how to make cool non-alcoholic cocktails with what you have on your menu, and then also have some specialties. And I like that that's becoming standard. Yeah. There shouldn't have to be some, like, I don't want to make people have to have a discussion with me where they're like, I think this cocktail looks good, but I don't drink. What can you do? Like, I would rather just put three things on the menu that it's like, there's no alcohol. You can just say a name, and you don't have to feel different. You don't have to feel removed from the party. You just say this goofy cocktail name instead of this one, and that one just happens to come with no alcohol. Like, no problem.
Yeah. Well, you like to fit in. You know, I can remember when I gave up drinking for 2 years, and I'd be out golfing with buddies, and they're all drinking beers. So I'd get me the non-alcoholic beer and have that just to sip on. It was terrible, but I fit in with the crowd, so I could just sip on my non-alcoholic beer and be just fine, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's part of, like, again, like, you know, there. At the end of the day, alcohol is a drug. It has addictive properties. It can really screw things up for you. So I think it's always good if you're an active drinker to know how to ask yourself, like, why do I want to drink right now? And is there a way that I can do something else instead? You know, like, is it the social aspect I want? Well, I can be social and not necessarily drink. Like, is it, I just want something sweet and flavorful? I can do that without drinking. And then sometimes you're like, nah, I want to drink. And that's fine, too. Speaking of which, this is a fun episode. Somebody tagged us in a tweet about the new show Drink Masters, that we should do a mashup or a team up with these people. They are way above us. Their pay grade is much higher than ours.
We're not on the same level with Netflix. We can't just call them up and say, hey, we're going to let you all do our show with us and you can come film us doing it.
Yeah, you should bring us on as extra, extra guest judges onto your super premium alcohol show.
Yeah. No,
that's not going to happen. I won't say never. Hey, if you're listening, Netflix, sure, we accept. But I didn't know anything about this show, and that tweet inspired me to seek it out and watch it, and I really enjoyed it. So I thought we could just talk about it.
Sure, it sounds good. I had seen it on there, and I looked at it, and I thought, well, that looks like something I need to talk to Tay about watching. And then you called and had that as an idea to do, and I was like, okay, fine. And we queued it right up, started watching it, I mean, within the hour of when you suggested it.
it's a really entertaining show. Just to sort of start, it's got some very impressive judges who I'm sure were involved in sort of the creation of this. Frankie Solaric is one of the judges. Solaric is kind of the foremost modernist, like, bartender. He works, his bar is in Toronto. It's massively successful. It's called Bar Chef, and Bar Chef kind of explains what he does. Like, his techniques are like wild molecular gastronomy stuff just applied to bartending. Really cool stuff. He has a book out, The Bar Chef, A Modern Approach to Cocktails. Like just, you know, very, very cutting edge barman, mm-hmm. Frankie Solaric.
Yeah.
And then the other judge, who I don't, I have run in some of the same circles as her. I have never had the honor of meeting her face to face. She's been pointed out to me at various bar events, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to approach her. She intimidates me. But that is Julie Reiner. She's a big deal here in New York City. She moved to New York in the 90s, kind of when the cocktail renaissance was taking off. She was originally bartending at a new place called C3. And this is around the, you know, you remember our Dale DeGroff episode, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I remember Dale DeGroff.
So one of the, he's the king of cocktails for a reason. He really is one of the main figures in bringing cocktails back to the mainstay in America. And around the same time period, he was launching what he would call cocktail safaris, where he would just sort of go out in the city and try to find a good drink. Mm-hmm. Wild to think of that now. Like you can throw a rock in almost any borough and hit a cocktail bar, or at least a bar with a cocktail menu. So Dale DeGroff got word that there was this young bartender using fresh juices at this place that he should check out, which is, again, kind of hilarious. The idea that fresh juice would be like, oh, that puts you on the map. That gets somebody's attention.
Hey, he's not using a premix. Boy, that's good.
Well, again, like we were talking at this time period, everybody's using guns. Everybody's using sour mix. Nothing right. is fresh. So he goes, he sits at her bar. He's so impressed with her that he, you know, gets write-ups about her in the New Yorker and the New York Times, and that kind of launches her career. Also, the attention she got, the positive attention that she got, her cocktail menu got at this restaurant, pissed off the chef so much that he got her fired. That's just restaurant industry bullshit 101. Like anyone that's like, oh, I bet that's not why. It's like, no, I am sure that's why.
Yep. That's a man's world, and she was entering into a man's world, huh?
Well, and that's something that I think I have nothing but respect for her, because like that was she started bartending at a young age. This was far from her first job, but she had a lot of young experience with like men were the bartenders. You could be a cocktail waitress, but you can't be a bartender. And so she's definitely well versed in the misogyny inherent in most industries, but especially the restaurant industry. And I mean, from there, she opened the Flatiron Lounge. That was her first kind of big project here in New York City. And that bar, you know, it was a fancy cocktail club. It trains and some of the next sort of era of influential bartenders, a lot of them were brought up at the Flatiron Lounge.
Yeah.
And then when she and her wife moved out to Brooklyn, she opened Clover Club, which is still there, still fantastic. And then shortly after that, they opened a pan-Latin cocktail bar, Leyenda. So Clover Club is more like pre-Prohibition style cocktail lounge, and then Leyenda is a bit more, you know, it's a different family of spirits. But I've been to both of them. They're both ridiculously good. But I also like they're really good, but they're not the same vibe as a lot of the more like, you know, you're in an exclusive speakeasy kind of bars. Like they're very chill. I feel like I'm at a neighborhood bar in both of those spots.
It's not intimidating when you go in there like you're out of your league, huh?
No, and that's something she's talked about, that mattered to her, that she didn't want, like, exclusivity in a bar isn't something she tries to, she doesn't, you know, court that vibe.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I feel like that's something that, you know, it makes a lot of people feel excluded, and it makes sense that someone, like, you know, being one of the foremost women in the bar world, that's, I understand where she's coming from with that. You want everyone to feel invited, you know, not, you know, because I wouldn't have felt, I don't feel invited at my big age and with my experience at some of those other cocktail bars.
Like, right.
Like, oh, you know, I'm not one of the boys.
Well, I thought it was interesting. They both have a book out about their cocktails and cocktailing. Yep. And then they also both have a line of bottled drinks out already, mixed cocktails. So.
Okay. Very, very incredibly, incredibly impressive judges. You know, you can really just watch it for that alone. And you should also go to, if you're in New York or Toronto, you should check out their bars and their books. Very talented people. But let's a little rundown of how the show works.
Okay. Well, they also don't skip the host. They have a host there. And he's kind of like, he described himself as Nick Cannon wasn't available, so they got him. So, you know, but he doesn't know anything about the drinks, but he knows he kind of does all the introduction, and he gets to sip the drinks along with him and give his opinion on it. And a lot of it, he's about like me coming along with you on this, because I've never heard of half these things. So he's kind of in the same boat I am. I could probably do his job, but he's better looking than me. So I think that he'd get the nod.
He's very charming. He's a very charming host. He's also like an established actor. He's a very talented actor, comedian.
I did see he's been in a couple things.
Yeah. But I like his presence because he doesn't give in to like what you might expect to be like, oh, all this stuff is wild. Like, I don't get any of this. Like, he gives his feedback and it's honest and it's a good, just like, this is a regular person reacting to these drinks.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Regular person would have to say. He gives good feedback. He doesn't like kind of make fun of how like extravagant these drinks are. So it's like, it's a good insert for anyone not familiar. Tone Bell is kind of like, this is you if you were in this situation.
he's strictly drinking a drink and saying, would I enjoy this if I was out on a Saturday night? You know, that's about his basis.
That opinion is just as important as the super experienced person's opinion. And sometimes that's actually the more important opinion.
Yeah, I agree that. There's more people in that category than in the exclusive category.
I've absolutely put drinks on a menu that I'm like, this is such a cool, wild, weird idea. And my bar friends will like be like, yeah, what a cool, wild, weird idea. And then the customers will be like, no, that's gross. I don't like that.
What the hell is that?
That's just too weird for me. And I'm like, oops. Like, sometimes if you're impressing the pretentious, judgmental bartenders, you might have a failure on your hand, actually, is what I've learned.
You jump the shark in bartending.
Yeah, like if they're bored by your, if they think, oh, your menu's cool, but it's a little boring, it's like probably it's going to be great for regular people then. And that's my audience. So, yeah. So the show itself, they've got 12 contestants?
I think it's 12, yeah.
Something like that. They've got, and they're all very, I mean, all of these people are owning bars or running programs, have won a ton of awards.
Been doing it a long time.
Yeah, there's no like new like ingenue bartender. There is one.
There is one. Yeah,
she's dispatched very quickly. I felt bad for her. There was an Instagram bartender, so she's never worked in a bar. She only posts pictures on Instagram, and she got eliminated very quickly.
Instagram girl. She makes the drinks. Her idea though is just how pretty can you make them? Here's the prettiest Negroni you've ever seen, you know.
Yeah.
But it taste has nothing to do with it because it's just a damn picture.
Well, and I mean, I think, you know, the drink that she goes in the first episode. Spoilers, we're going to spoil stuff. She goes in the first episode, and the judges in no way thought she made a bad drink. It's that her drink, the flavor combinations weren't particularly interesting. They were very boring flavor combinations. They were combinations that a million people have done before. And that's one of those things that, like, it's not bad instincts to say, I don't know, like rosemary and grapefruit taste great together. They do. And I will never be mad at a rosemary grapefruit cocktail. But if you've been in the bar world long enough, you see that flavor combination come up and go, yeah, that's easy. And I don't know how useful that is, because at the end of the day, if you enjoy it, we shouldn't retire a flavor combination just because you enjoy it. But that's, she doesn't have that experience. You know, she doesn't know necessarily enough to say, oh, there's 100 versions of the cocktail that I just put up. Oops. Well,
she's a good sacrificial lamb, though, because I think that most everybody that watches the show is kind of like, oh, they got to get rid of her. So,
well, I also,
she does go first, so you know, you're not dissatisfied.
Yeah, but I also immediately followed her on Instagram, so like, I do. She makes beautiful cocktails. She got a bigger platform from it, so good for her.
I'm not on the gram or the TikTok, so I couldn't follow her.
So each, it's kind of like a Great British Bake Off vibe. So you've got your, each week there's a new kind of theme, and they do like an initial drink, and then there's like an elimination drink or something, you know, and you whittle it down until you get like a top three that they went head to head.
Well, it varies on different ones. They always pick who did the best, whether they're in teams, the best team, or the best one if it's individual. And then, depending, sometimes it's two and sometimes it's three, they whittle it down to your, they don't say the worst. It's just your drink didn't impress us as much as the others.
Yeah.
You know? So they have a direct face off with those two or three.
I think they did a really good job of selecting the talent in that. And it's funny because I actually, one of the first reviews I saw was so hateful towards the bartenders themselves. Like, all these pretentious hipsters. And I was like, wait, you have not experienced pretentious bartender hipsters if you think these people are they. These people are all very pleasant. They're all very stylish. They all have good taste. They're performers. You know, you get why the person of the bartender matters. Like, it's good to have a cultivated aesthetic, a personality behind the bar. So these are all, like, characters. But none of them were anywhere close to the level of, like, assholery that I have experienced working at bars in Brooklyn. Like, these are all saints compared to that.
Well, not only that, I mean, you got to figure they're going to be on TV or, you know, so yeah. they're going to, maybe this isn't the way they normally dress when they're out being a bartender, but they're on TV. You're on a major series on a major streaming network. You're going to look good.
I entirely believe that's the way they all dress when they bartend.
Well, I don't know. Some of them look pretty fancy. I don't think so.
I mean, there are bars you go to and everybody looks like they're the main character in a different, like, weird anime. And that's just a certain level of bartending, because it's not just about your drinks. It's about the story behind them. It's about you. And I enjoy that element. It is just a different school of thought. Do you want drinks? Like, I just want to judge what's in the glass. That's it. I don't even need you to tell me what's in it. I just want to know if I like it or not. Or do you like the story? I like the story, but different taste, you know?
Yeah, these people, they're all personalities. They're not just, I'm going to mix your drink here. Take it, go, bye. They're all personalities, and you can tell by looking at them and the way they act and the way, and they all like what they're doing too. They all have a passion for it. You can tell they're really into it, and they all, you know, have a lot of confidence. You know, I'm the best one, and they should recognize this.
But nobody's particularly nasty, which was, I was anticipating that after seeing that review. I thought they were going to get like some real jerks, and like I think like the most drama is like somebody swaps somebody's ingredients.
Yeah,
somebody
I was gonna
to
say
something they didn't want to work with.
And he kept saying, "I'm mad at you. I'm pissed off at you. Yeah, I hate you. I'm not ever gonna like you now."
Well, I like that the bartender.
But he said it with a smile on his face.
He was very charming. He also like part of it was that he's like, "Well, I have a citrus allergy, so this is really." This is a really hard one. You forcibly made me take a citrus fruit. And I'm just like, buddy, what do you think lemon and lime are? Like, you got a pomelo. It's like, that's a lot of citrus. Citrus is an essential part of bartending, I would say. So I don't know how you get along in this field if you can't have citrus. But whatever. It was the moment of TV drama. That, and then like one of the contestants... There's several milk punches made throughout the show, and one of the contestants is, like, snarky about it. Like, well, if everybody just wants to make a milk punch every week, then fine. And then she ends up making a milk punch, like, the next week. So it's like, okay.
Well, they changed her thinking.
I guess it was winning. Milk punch was winning, so it's fine.
But then in addition to the drinks that they have to come up with, you know, like one of the things is make a margarita that has no ingredients of a margarita, you know. And
well, that wasn't the challenge. The challenge was, and this is where, and you know, I want to lead with saying, I think the show is really cool. It's really fun. Absolutely watch it. The drinks are gorgeous. Ton of good ideas. Ton of really innovative, smart flavor combinations. If I have a complaint, and this is just, you know, me, nobody. This is just my two-cent opinion. But the episode with the margarita, I think it's the first episode, right?
I think, first one.
They're told to make a margarita, and I wish that there had been any sort of structure for the audience of, like, this is what a margarita should be. Like, there's not a lot of history in this. There's not a lot of structure. There's not a lot of knowledge being shared on the show. And I mean, that's just, you know, it's modernist bartending. You don't need to have that. But I kind of wish there had been, because the plays on the margarita that these people put up, I mean, I would say to be a margarita, you have to have tequila or something in the agave family. You should have, I mean, maybe not lime, but there should be a strong citrus. And I do think orange matters, or again, something very similar, like, I don't know, tangerine, something orange adjacent. And it should probably be shaken and maybe salinity. Like, I wish they'd kind of given, like, these are the vital elements of a margarita. You need to both have those present and do something new versus just, like, it seemed like the farther away you got from a margarita, the better, which I don't know. I don't know about that.
Well, some of them had no ingredients of a margarita, and they were like, it reminds me of a margarita. And then other ones, they didn't have any elements of margarita, and they drank and said, this doesn't remind me at all of a margarita. And I don't know how you make that judgment, you know? I don't know how you decide that.
Yeah. Well, and like, there were no real structural challenges. Like, I would have loved, like, I don't know. I know this is like dorky bartending stuff, but I remember one night I was working at a bar, it was slow, and my fellow bartender was a big daiquiri fan. So we just kind of worked just with the white rums we had on our back bar, and we made a couple different daiquiris. We used different measures, 1 ounce of lime, 3/4 lime, you know, 3/4 simple or an ounce of simple or sub and demerara, very small changes. And we played around to see what makes the best daiquiri. What daiquiri do we like the most? Choosing a different white rum, a different measure of lime, and a different measure of sugar. And I think that shows a bartender's hand more than when you're just throwing tons of stuff and you've got a whole diorama built around the drink. Like, I do wish that the structure had been equally emphasized as the appearance. As much as I love the appearance, as much as I love the story, all that, I love that stuff, don't get me wrong. It would have been really cool to have a bit more emphasis on, like, the drink. Like, you know, the technical challenges in Great British Bake Off?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I wish there had been technical challenges. Like, make me your best old fashioned. It can deviate slightly, but it needs to have the DNA of a classic old fashioned. And, like, you need to explain why you make the changes you make, you know?
Yeah, well, that could have been the same thing with the margarita. Mm-hmm. You know, they could have said, go make me the best margarita I've ever had. And everybody's got their idea on what tequila or a mezcal or agave or whatever, and what juices work best, and what orange, you know, that you're going to add in there. Yeah, everybody's got different opinions on that. So you make the best one and then judge by test. But, you know, that's the other part of it that you touched on, the diorama. That's not a joke. That's for real. They like,
oh, yeah.
They want you to make this big structure to put the glass on to bring it back. And it's all this stuff and smoke coming up from it and everything. It's like, okay, make a margarita. You have 90 minutes. Go. It's like, how many are you going to sell in a bar that take you 90 minutes?
I would love if they do, like, I'm sure they must do another season of this. I think this season did well. Like, have a flash challenge. You have, like, an actual, like, 5 minutes. You've got access to a classic back bar. You've got 5 minutes to make me, I don't know, a South Side. You've got 5 minutes to make me a Manhattan. Make me the best Manhattan you can make, and then go head-to-head. Because it's like, there were no speed competitions. There was no, like, elementals. I mean, because that's the kind of stuff, you know, one of the first lessons I remember learning from my first bar mentor was I was playing around. It was a slow day, and I'd made a riff, actually, on a margarita. And he tried it, and he's like, the problem is it's not bad, but it's not better than a well-made margarita. And if you're going to add 2 extra steps, 3 extra steps to a classic margarita, and it doesn't end up better, then you wasted product, you wasted my time.
So, that's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, like, you need to get, it needs to surpass the simple and good already existing drink. Which is really hard to do, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it's an entertaining show, and they do a lot of cool stuff.
Oh, but yeah, it's beautiful.
These guys are supposed to be bartenders. They're not, you know, chefs or short order cooks or artists. I mean, as far as building things, you know, or making displays, and they're drink masters. You know, they're supposed to be making drinks, and I feel like it needs to be more challenges of flavor. Challenges of combinations, even speed challenges, you know?
Yeah.
Go make me, you have 2 minutes, make me 15 old fashions or whatever, you know? And they got to be good.
Well, you know? I got really excited when they had a prohibition themed episode. When they introduced the theme, I'm like, oh, are they going to have to work with like bottom shelf booze and like use knowledge of the way that prohibition bartenders hid flavors,
yeah,
and built flavors? And maybe, like, remake a classic Prohibition cocktail using bottom-shelf alcohol and make it something delicious. And instead, it was just sort of offhand, like, oh, and Prohibition drinks were bad. And then it was just sort of the aesthetics. Like, they didn't actually, like, talk about the history. And, like, again, like, it's, I feel like they are making a show to try to appeal to an audience that is used to cooking shows. Like, what you said about them, sort of, they're not chefs. They're not, this felt almost like the, like, pastry light. Because a lot of them ended up, they were making, like, you know, gels and sorbets and
ice cream.
Yeah, like
breads with cheese and tomato.
It really like, it's not, it's okay that bartending is not cooking. We don't need to be cooking.
Yeah.
I mean, I can make a good cocktail without stepping foot in the kitchen if you know your back bar well enough. The cocktails all leaned heavily on cooking, on making infusion, making syrups, you know, cooking. And it just, there was a lack of spirit knowledge. Not, these people don't lack knowledge. These people have the knowledge. I wish the structure of the show had been more focused on that. But yeah. I mean, that's because I'm a nerd. I don't know. Like, again, the show is not made for people like me. It's made for people that don't know the bartending world and to be entertained. And this might be the formula that's proven to work.
But here's the thing. You want to capture the largest audience you can capture. I guarantee you there's more people like me that know very little about it than there is people that have this extensive knowledge to do that. And if they just did like a little 10-minute little history thing of about these different drinks that they're focusing on, is just like you said, the Prohibition one. They could have done 10 minutes of Prohibition and overcoming the bottom shelf gin or whatever that was available in those days. And this is how they did different things. This is how some of these things came about, you know, like your bitters and all that kind of stuff. And that would have, I think that would have been more, and it would have been educational. And I think the more you know, the more you want to do those kind of things. And it should encourage people to want to get involved in that kind of stuff. I hope our podcast does that to some extent.
Well, it's like this kind of keeps up the sort of illusion of like, this is impenetrable. Like, this is a mastercraft. No one knows how to do this. And maybe again, that, yes, like our angle is like, no, everybody can do this. To do it at that level, no, you need years of experience. You need massive training. Absolutely. But to do it well, you actually don't. You need to know some structures. You need to know some formulas. You need to know the things that you can't skimp on. But beyond that, it is, you know, I want people to feel like it's approachable. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I think, like, I don't know, like, bespoke cocktails are such a thing in, like, a mark of a good bartender. And, like, what a cool challenge that would have been. It's like everybody gets randomly assigned a different patron. That patron gives you, like, four things that they like. They say they like stirred and serious, they like savory, they like dark rums, and they like blueberries. And you just have to fucking go. Mm-hmm. And then the judges compare, how well did you please the customer? And how good was your drink? Like, yeah, that would, like, you know, like, that's a skill that you're supposed to have as a bartender. And I don't know. I mean, I think an audience would enjoy that. But, like, the process behind it, you know?
Yeah, I do, too. And they do have guest judges on there. Dale DeGroff actually makes an appearance. And, you know, surprised me. Yeah, it surprised me. A lot of times I think that when these guest judges come, especially somebody, you know, like him, he's going to come on and everything's going to be friendly because he doesn't, you know, want to. But he just got right to it. No, this was not a good structure on this. You know, you didn't do a good job with this one. But I thought that was better that he did, because you want to hear that kind of feedback. He's an expert, you know, so you want to hear that kind of feedback.
No, they all, I mean, and I like that the judging was, it was both, you know, it was helpful, but it didn't sugarcoat anything, which was cool. Like, they gave very honest feedback.
Here's the thing that surprised me the most. There are bartenders on that show, drink masters, that were serving drinks they had not tasted.
Yeah, that's weird. That was one of the, like, when I first started competing, I had somebody that was a more savvy competitor tell me, like, the kiss of death in a competition is they'll watch you. The judges will watch you. And if you don't taste your drink and then you serve it to them, you're automatically starting at a deficit, because you should always taste your drink. And not only that, judges look for that. And it was weird that they kept asking that of contestants. And the contestants would be like, no.
No, I don't like that particularly, so I didn't drink it. Well, how can you make a drink with it if you don't like it?
I know what you're putting out.
I mean, it's the same for all of it. It's just, I've seen that on MasterChef Junior, when these kids, they're having to make something and it's like, but I don't like that. So they don't taste it. Then they come up and say, so you're serving this to me and you haven't tasted it. That's just a basic 101 to me. If you don't taste it, you don't know if it's any good.
That was a little surprising. I will say my most surprising moment was that the bartender that almost killed the judges didn't go home.
Yeah, that's right.
he put dry ice in a drink, which we just talked about. Yeah. Don't put hunks of dry ice in a drink. He explained the technique he used, which like that might be a valid technique, but if there's a trick that you're going to do in a drink and if it goes wrong, you might choke someone to death, you should not do it. It's not worth it. And then you go on to realize that part of the reason the reaction was so strong is Frankie, the one judge, that he's mastered a technique of sort of pulverizing and using dry ice in a very safe way to get that effect, to get that super cold, like smoky. So, I mean, you're talking to the master of dealing with like this technique, and he's just like, no, I don't buy it. I'm not drinking that.
But I had to give you an attaboy when they got on and said, no, you just don't put that in there. You could kill somebody. You don't do it. And that's exactly what you said just a few weeks ago.
Well, and hey, you know, I know some stuff, but
how not to die, huh?
I know. I think that's the first rule you're supposed to learn.
The survival rule of bartending. Don't die.
Don't kill your customers. Don't die and don't murder. That's anything. First rule.
Thou shalt not.
Yeah. But it's a really, there were so many challenges that like, you know, I want to like replicate on my own just to like the color one. Oh, that got my mind going. Like, just how would I do that? Like, but they each had to do a specific color palette. It's a really fun show. Tons of cool stuff. Room for some new ideas in the next season that I hope exists. But ultimately, I would recommend.
Yeah, I would. And I think that our listeners will get more out of it than people that are just coming not having any kind of background.
Yeah.
Because you won't understand enough about the structures or what they're doing, and you're just looking at drink. Once you start understanding some of those things, I think it makes it all much more interesting.
Yeah, I agree. Very, very, very cool. Thank you to the – I never know actually if somebody wants to be called out without their permission. So thank you to the Twitter person that tagged us in that tweet, because I would not have watched it if not. So thank you.
Thank you for the tweet.
Yes. Thank you, Netflix. Your people can call our people.
Yeah, we're ready to do that. I'll even wear a suit like Tone Loke or whatever
Tone
his
Bell.
Name is. Tone Bell.
I will wear a suit as well. All right. Well, this was fun. You haven't finished it, right? You've got a few episodes left?
Yeah, I got a couple episodes left to see who's going to win. I'm rooting for the girl with the pinkish or reddish hair and one side of her head shaved.
Katie?
I don't ever remember any of their names, but that's the one that I'm rooting for. I kind of like her attitude about her drinks.
I won't spoil anything, but I will say the person that wins is who I think I related to the most, because they perform consistently. There's never any drama, and they're just like a powerhouse, but quietly the whole time. Mm-hmm. I feel like I get that. Like, I lack the giant cool personality behind a bar, but I am like a weird mad scientist that's going to go off in a corner and be like, I came up with the thing. Do you like it? Cool. Bye. this person had that kind of vibe, so I was glad with the winner. But they're all so talented. You know, there's none of these people are losers. They're all incredibly employed, desirable bartenders, you know?
Yep. It's a fun show.
Thank you. Thank you, Dad, for watching, and thank you for joining me.
Well, thanks, Tay, for having me. I'm glad that you encouraged me to watch that, because it was fun to watch.
Thank you, listeners. I hope you check it out. Thank you, of course, to our patrons over on our Patreon. You are the reason this podcast gets made. If you have any other drinking shows you want to tell us about, you can hit us up on social media at NeatBoozeCast on Twitter and Instagram, and NeatBoozeCast@gmail.com. And if you want to talk about this show with other fans, you can do that
at Beat the Booze Cast group page on Facebook.
Go there. All right. Well, Hey, I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been...
Yep, we have to start serving brownies and bread and bubbling trees or something with your drinks anymore.
I did a bit of that. I got really into candy because it started off with I wanted to do hard candy sticker sticks that had alcohol inside of them. And so I had to, it was interesting, and this is why these people impressed me, because I realized that for that little hard candy garnish, I had to learn candy making. And that every new thing that I thought, oh, it would be cool if I did peanut brittle on this with like the, I had like some alcohol, some whiskey washed peanuts that I used that I had left over. Like, oh, I'll make peanut brittle. I'm like, oh, I have to learn how to make peanut brittle now. And that's a whole thing. Yeah. So to amass all of these skills just to garnish your drinks, it's madness.
I put a Jolly Rancher in a Zima once.
That's madness.